Trendstorm.
Our final topic, picked by you, dear listeners, earlier in a poll on our Facebook page, is Bannon's insurgency. Can he take down the rhinos? Focusing on Breitbart's efforts to defeat establishment Republicans in future elections. Former White House chief strategist and current executive chairman of Breitbart, Steve Bannon, is reportedly preparing to support several primary challenges to Senate Republicans, setting the ultimate outsider up for a possible confrontation with hardened establishment insiders. The news was first reported by Politico, which said that Bannon was orchestrating this insurgent campaign with Republican billionaire Robert Mercer, and that several top Republican leaders were supposedly on a list to be targeted. Bannon's Breitbart and most of Trump's populist base refer to individuals such as Senators Jeff Flake and Bob Corker as Republicans in name only, or rhinos, because of the perception that they're pretty much political Democrats hiding under Republican slogans for votes from their conservative constituencies. CNN, which reported on the story that Politico first broke, relevantly quoted what Bannon said in a recent interview with CBS's Charlie Rose. He's on video talking about rhinos and remarking in a series of statements that, quote, they do not want Donald Trump's populist, economic nationalist agenda to be implemented. It's very obvious. They're going to be held accountable if they do not support the President of the United States. Right now, there's no accountability. They do not support the President's program. End quote. All this is important to bear in mind because it proves that Bannon's insurgency is aimed at holding the rhinos' feet to the fire by making them accountable to Trump's populist base in their constituencies, one which is in favor of the president's agenda of economic nationalism and are opposed to the globalism of the elites. This grassroots struggle is yet another of the many battles taking place in the so-called Republican Civil War, which itself could more accurately be framed as part of a war between the globalist elite and the populist masses. The establishment won the Democratic Civil War when they succeeded in beating Sanders, but they lost when it came to stopping Trump's election, though their rhino vanguard is now trying to hijack the president's agenda and co-opt him as a last resort. Bannon's insurgency therefore takes on a heightened role in this respect because it stands the chance of returning accountability to the American political system and safeguarding the populist electoral victory from last November. So folks, this is a very deep topic, and I'm pleased to announce that we are joined by Mr. Don DeBar to discuss this further. Don hosts a syndicated daily radio newscast, CPR News, which is heard all across the U.S. Hello, Don, and welcome to Trendstorm.
Yep.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Donna, Bannon has what is perhaps the most popular online news site in the U.S. under his control and has reportedly secured support from billionaire financier Robert Mercer for his primary insurgency against the rhinos. So how much of a threat do you think he poses to them?
Well, it's a really interesting dynamic around all of this. First of all, this is clearly Bannon acting as an agent of Trump and both settling scores politically, but more important, trying to reconfigure the Senate. And I assume there's going to be a similar effort in the House, and it may also be run by Bannon and or others that we may see leave the White House to do it. Mercer, Bob Mercer, is one of two real powerhouse players that come out of the hedge fund business, which is an interesting framing of what I'm about to say. Mercer is a huge contributor to the Republicans over a long period of time. He began with the Koch brothers, but he has his own foundation that he set up, and he pursues his own agenda, which is quite distinct from that of the Koch brothers. That's first. He was a computer scientist. In fact, he was a pioneer in computer language, also conversion of voice to digital voice conversions, some mathematical constructs. He's in essence a computer mathematician. He was at IBM Research in 1972, T.J. Watson, here in Yorktown Heights, about a mile and a half from my house. And he went to work, left IBM, and went into the hedge fund business with a guy named Jim Simons, who was running an agency called Renaissance, but it comes out of another grouping. And Simons is also a mathematician, like a world-class mathematician, a guy that worked on developing string theory and such. The two of them applied mathematical skills, computer modeling and such, to hedge funds. And as a matter of fact, the one hedge fund that they worked on together that now is run by Mercer, is the most successful one on the planet. So now he, Simons, is a major contributor to the Democrats. He was a contributor to Clinton's people, you know, to Clinton's campaign. He gave better than $6 million to Clinton's various, funds. He is said to be shopping for a replacement. He's not one of these kinds of guys. He's a hedge fund guy that's looking at, well, I'm loyal to Hillary Clinton come hell or high water. I backed her. She failed. Next. And so you've got both of these guys with a lot of time on their hands because Simons is actually retired. And like a $65 billion fund that they sit on top of, enter into the politics as contrarians, potentially in each of the two parties. So you may see, for example, Simons partnering with Sanders or someone else. And you could see American politics change completely.
Wow, yeah. I mean, this is pretty interesting. I didn't know it about that all on that level. Well, Don, I want to ask you that. I mean, you already spoke about how Bannon is likely doing this with Trump. So this leads me to my next question. It's about how receptive you think Americans will even be to all this. And what are the prospects that more populist coordination develops between companies, mega financiers, and political action committees in the future? I mean, you just spoke about how it seems like the left wing is trying to emulate what Bannon did. So, I mean, you think this is really the beginning of a new age of not just media, but also political coordination?
Well, the two guys I'm talking about, Simons and Mercer, are hedge fund guys who made the most successful hedge fund on mathematics and computer modeling. The American political landscape, as we saw both with the rise of Trump and the rise of Sanders, it has changed dramatically. The institutions poll in every possible way as having lost legitimacy, every one of them, the political institutions, the media, the government, et cetera, et cetera. And so these are people who look at things that are in flux, like, you know, huge chunks of the financial market, make computer models, figure out, you know, do the calculus and say, okay, this is what we need to do. To let you know, they had better than 74% per annum over the last 20 years return on the monies and their funds. So these guys know how to predict the future. The people are fed up with what's happened here for the last decades. And so they're pitching in. I don't know who's going to lead and who's going to follow in that process, but big change is coming.
Okay, I see. Well, I guess then if we just have to wrap everything up then, I mean, when we look at Bannon just as a man, I mean, how influential would you rate him? I mean, if you just had to kind of compare him to recent figures that aren't politicians, but in terms of the impact he's had on the country, I mean, some people even credit him for Trump's victory. Now he served a little bit of time in the White House, and now he's back on the insurgent trail, if you will. So, I mean, how important is Bannon right now nowadays in 21st century America, 2017?
Well, we've had a unanimity across the media, whether it's MSNBC all the way to Fox, even Democracy Now! and Pacifica and others, on the issue of Trump. And Bannon all of a sudden is going to be out there in the world with this very powerful voice that he is, sits at the top of. And we know which side he's on in this. And so we're going to start hearing, just by the sheer force of clicks at Bannon's website, Trump's side of the story. That's all by itself going to change the narrative some. That'll have to be covered by the Times and by the Washington Post and CNN and everything, even if only to reposition it, because millions of people will see it. So he has a lot of power just in that one particular venue. And taking that game into the political arena and helping to reconfigure the Senate, I think that's an extremely powerful position.
Okay, Don, thanks a lot for speaking with us today. You hit on a lot of good points and you gave us a lot to think about, especially as it relates to the Democrats creating a counter to Breitbart's populist insurgency. So let's see what happens on that front.
Trendstorm.
Now we're going to switch over and get a view from across the pond, as we say, from Mr. Adam Gary. He is a managing director at The Durant. Okay, Adam, is Bannon pulling a reverse Soros, so to speak, in the sense of copying Soros-like organizational tactics of coordinating media, financial, and political campaigns, but this time in favor of a populist cause against an establishment one?
Well, he's absolutely doing that, and in many ways he's doing even more. To understand this, we need to focus beyond his domestic rhetoric and look at what he recently said in China and Hong Kong, to be specific, where he spoke just very recently. In his speech, it was a sort of carrot and stick phenomenon. Imagine a sort of home supply shop built full of sticks, built next to the fruit and veg market filled with carrots. On the one hand, he talked about President Xi being more admired by Donald Trump than any leader in the world. He spoke of his own admiration for what can only be called the post-Deng Xiaoping economic miracle of China. Now, 24 hours later, Trump posted on his social media that China has a 15% business tax rate and the U.S. should lower its own business tax rate to achieve parity with China. These are statements which indicate a kind of admiration for China. Put in a more negative way, we could say that there's a kind of jealousy. That whereas in 78, Deng Xiaoping, the paramount leader of China at the time, implemented reforms he called market socialism to, frankly, make China great again, that Bannon and Trump, who still is very much an ally of Bannon, albeit kept at arm's length by various powers that be, they want to achieve something similar in the United States. At the same time, Bannon talks about economic war with China. He said not so long ago that he envisages America going to war with China in over the South China Sea disputes within a 10-year period. This is far from admiration in many ways. This is provocation. It's hostility. But what Bannon seems to be trying to do is building a kind of global coalition in the service of his ideology, which is not alt-right. That's a very poor word to use. So let's call it the Bannonite ideology of a new kind of conservatism. It implies a kind of pragmatism that rejects things like the Wolfowitz doctrine of the 90s and other policy statements from the neocons. It's opposed to regime change in the Middle East. It sees North Korea for what it actually is, and it's refreshingly honest about this. It sees it as a sideshow to America trying to ruffle the feathers of China and create conflicts on either side of its One Belt, One Road trading and commerce initiatives. And overall, the biggest question mark about what Bannonism is does it think that after some period of tension, China and America can coexist? Ultimately, they have to coexist. And if Bannonism ends up saying that they can't, then it's going to be as failed an ideology as the neocon ideology, whose results are literally setting much of the world up in flames as we speak, even though some of those flames, certainly in Syria, are being extinguished by the Syrian Arab Army, by Russia, by Iran, Hezbollah, and others. So he's absolutely trying to build a global movement. And in terms of the media side of things, he's done a remarkable job at that. Breitbart is a very successful outlet, and it's successful at uniting disparate groups that might not agree on a lot of things, but they do agree on what their opponents are. They're all opposed to the neoliberal economics that has been the leading force in Europe, the United States, and Western-style economies since arguably the 80s. It's opposed to a kind of ideological base foreign policy, and one way or another, it generally respects strength. This obviously has its ups and its downs, but that's essentially what he's able to do in building this Breitbart coalition. Eventually, it might fracture, but for now, it's certainly a surging force. So when you look at what Bannon is doing by giving these very prolific, frankly, speeches in China...
Yeah. I was just agreeing with you, Adam. Yeah, I was just agreeing with you with everything you were talking about. You know, I'd just like to jump in real quickly. I'd like to ask you about the impact that Bannon's Breitbart insurgency, Bannonism, as you called it, will have on the contemporary state of American political campaigning, which has recently become dominated by a combination of shadowy super PAC financiers like Soros, mainstream media outlets, celebrities, and big data. So what can we expect from the impact of this insurgency?
Well, I think that this Bannon insurgency is going to change the face of American politics forever. The big money from people like Soros is still there, and it's not going to go away. Soros is more than a man at this point. It's an idea. It's a phenomenon of big business colluding with big old media to quash any independent voices and to paint very stage-managed and inauthentic perspectives of various candidates. And when it comes to an inauthentic candidate, Hillary Clinton is the most authentically authentic candidate you can get. She would say anything to get into power. And the fact that she did that and didn't get into power shows that Bannon and his way of doing political campaigns has only just begun. It involves galvanizing social media. It involves galvanizing groups who previously were left out of politics because either they were too young, they were too old, they were too poor, they were too so-called extreme, which to translate American into a more international way of looking at things means the people who simply opposed the two-party system, which was a one-party system in all but name. Democrats and Republicans both argued for virtually the same things ever since the end of the Reagan era. So Bannon is absolutely shaking all of that up. And from his position outside of the White House, as he himself admits, he can do a lot more than he could inside the White House. The other thing that Bannon has exposed is how unpowerful the President of the United States really is. Donald Trump campaigned on this Bannonite platform. He galvanized new voters, people that have never voted before, which is why most of the polling agencies got it totally wrong, because they didn't go after the people who had never voted before. Maybe some of them couldn't even find where these people were. Outside of the White House, Bannon is going to lead a movement which is only going to expose the great divide between this movement, which brought Trump into power, and the people in Washington, both in the Congress and the people that surround Trump in the White House. The result is going to be that in the next presidential election, whether Trump runs or not, and it's far too early to speculate on that, there's certainly going to be a Bannonite-style conservative, call it populist if you will, candidate. And that person, whoever this person might be, and it could well be Trump, is going to be an absolutely formidable force. Trump was sent in to drain the swamp. That didn't really go well. But Bannon is now shifting, he's pivoting his policy to exposing just how deep and wide the swamp is. And it's bigger, frankly, than even people like me would have anticipated. We all knew that it was big. But the fact that you have a president of the United States who's an outspoken man, who's a bold man, who's a flashy man, and he seems so restricted, so handcuffed, it really has exposed the American democracy for something that's become a sham. And when we had people like Bush or Obama or the Clintons running around Washington, you couldn't really tell that because we didn't know if they were really leaders or just middle management for the deep state. Now we know, and Bannon deserves a great deal of credit for exposing that to the world.
Okay, Adam, as usual, you gave us a very full picture of what's happening, and I was very happy to have you on Trendstorm. Thanks again for coming on our show.
Trendstorm.
Now, folks, if we think back on what both Don and Adam share with us today, we can see that what Bannon is doing, I mean, this is definitely an insurgency. However, as Adam commented on, he is following in the footsteps of Soros, but not necessarily in the bad way. He is using the Soros model for populist and, if we may say, positive ends. So this is something very unique. It's something very new. But as Don told us, we can expect the Democrats to try to come up with their own Breitbart, their own type of insurgency. So it does look like American politics are changing. We'll just have to see in which direction they'll ultimately go. Now, folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. And with this, we end this week's edition of Trendstorm, brought to you by Radio Sputnik. It was presented by me, Andrew Kripko. Thank you for listening, and take care.